Hello, and welcome to Deliciously Gluten-Free, your guide to tasty foods and eating out again without feeling excluded. And yes, that includes really good bread. This is your resource for practical ways to interact with the world and get your needs met, from delicious recipes to ideas for safe and satisfying ways to attend various social situations, as well as ways to work with friends and loved ones to find win-wins at the dinner table. I'm your host, Mary Paisan, and I am a gluten-free coach and consultant. Today, I am talking with Chef Alina Eisenhower. She is an award-winning chef who has appeared numerous times on Food Network and has been featured in many publications. 20 years ago, Chef Alina began making a name for herself and winning awards as a traditional bread baker, pastry chef, and owner of the Sturbridge Baking Company and Sweet Kitchen and Bar. Chef Alina has also previously worked as an instructor at the Cambridge School of Culinary Arts. After being diagnosed with an autoimmune disease and needing to adopt a gluten-free lifestyle, Alina turned all of her focus to reformulating her award-winning recipes to be gluten-free. Chef Alina now divides her time between teaching gluten-free baking online and consulting for restaurants and bakeries. And fun fact, Chef Alina is also a professional fitness competitor. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Important topic.
It is. It really is. So tell us a little bit more about your story and how you got here.
I mean, I had always, even before I was diagnosed, I've always been curious. I was raised in a family where health and nutrition, like good food was always really important, but so was health and nutrition. So it wasn't completely foreign to me, gluten-free or using alternative grains and stuff. But obviously my focus, I mean, I was known as a traditional pastry chef, which is lots of sugar, lots of gluten, and lots of dairy. And then I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, which
exactly. There we go.
Thanks. Okay. Sorry about that.
So you were diagnosed with Hashimoto's.
I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and going gluten-free, the more I learned about it and how many people it had really helped to be gluten-free, I decided to go gluten-free. And I mean, really quickly noticed a difference in how I felt. And I've noticed that now in my Facebook group and a lot of the people that I work with, that a huge amount of the people that are gluten-free, it's because of some sort of an autoimmune, but quite a lot of people, it's actually thyroid related. Mm. And so it's not like celiac where I'm going to end up in the hospital if I have gluten, but I'm going to feel, 30 years older if I have gluten, and my whole body hurts and the inflammation is really pretty, pretty pronounced. So when I, started converting recipes for myself, but I realized really quickly that there's so much conflicting information out there. It's really hard for people to tell. And just in general, not even gluten-free specifically, but just in general online, how do you know a recipe is good? Like there's lots of anybody can put a recipe up. Anybody can call themselves a food blogger. Anybody can write a recipe. And so if they're not really well tested, they can look nice in a picture. And then, people blame themselves because the recipe didn't turn out. Maybe you just started with a crappy recipe. So it became really important to me to try to develop really good recipes that I knew were tested because I have the background. And I also have really high standards because I come from so many years of making things the traditional way, which is easier to get the textures and things that people are used to. So I began to really work on doing that and to be able to share it with people. And this year is when I've really, it's only very recently, it's been a few months that I started my Facebook group, and it's like taken off like crazy because I think people are really craving that. People want, it's just so confusing. It gets expensive. The flour is expensive. And so having to play around is hard, and it makes me really happy. Like I love doing this work. Nothing makes me happier than people tell me that how happy they were because they finally could have something they haven't had in years, or their kids, even more so that their kids, it's really hard on kids, teenagers, that all of a sudden we're told they can't eat their favorite things, and then to be able to have them again, like that makes it worth it to me 100%.
It's huge. It's a huge feeling. Yeah. Huge. And yeah. I agree that the ingredients are so expensive, and the worst thing in the world is when you pour all this time and energy and money into something and it comes out and you're like, I made a brick.
Right.
So exactly. Let's talk to those people who want gluten-free pastry. Mm-hmm. You're doing teaching and recipe development and restaurant consulting now. Why did you choose that instead of opening another bakery?
A lot of reasons. Running a retail establishment is a lot of hard work. There's a ceiling as to how much of a living you can make at it. And the amount of hours you put in versus what you get out of it. What a lot of people don't realize is that in the restaurant bakery industry, the average profit margin in the US is between 3% and 6%. It's not very much. Mm. That's a very low profit margin compared to a lot of other businesses for a lot of really hard work. And it's fun and I loved it when I did it, but you don't have much of a life and there's only so many people you can reach. And doing what I'm doing now, I'm helping. I mean, it's amazing. I have people all over the world. I have people in my classes from New Zealand and Spain. And so it's so much of a bigger reach and I'm able to help so many more people that it just makes, to me, it makes so much more sense.
That's so exciting. Yeah. How long did it take you to learn how to do gluten-free pastry?
So some things are harder than others. It's funny. So I cookies and cakes, brownies, muffins, things like that, almost no time at all. They're because I have an understanding of baking and baking science and stuff. To me, those are very easy. And I honestly think, and I think people are starting to learn that, especially in my group, is that it's been very overcomplicated online and people have been led to believe that it's a lot harder than it is. They overcomplicate adding ingredients and things they don't need to do. It's actually not that hard because the science of baking in traditional recipes, I always use pancakes and muffins as an example. When you read a traditional recipe, it tells you not to overmix it. Be really careful not to overmix it. That's because you don't want to develop the gluten. So those recipes already prefer to have less gluten in them. So it's not that hard to change over a pancake recipe or a cookie recipe. Bread is another story. Laminated pastry, things like croissants and things like that is much harder. And I started off as a bread baker and bread still was one of the hardest things. It's gotten easier over the years because again, ingredients are a lot more readily available online and even in supermarkets, it's a lot easier to find the things you need. So now, in the last year or so that I've started to really focus more on breads and finally croissants, which is probably the most exciting thing. And biscuits I just did, but croissants I just figured out maybe a month ago.
And oh, did you?
Yeah. And we got them. I mean, I used to bake a lot of traditional croissants. So my expectations for croissants, I want it crispy on the outside and I want lots of layers. I don't just want them soft. You know, I don't want a soft thing. I want it to crunch when I bite it and have, you can see the layers and yeah, I figured it out. So I'm like,
oh my
super
gosh,
excited.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it's different. It's a similar technique. Yeah, it's similar to traditional, but it's different. And I literally, I cried the first time I tasted it. I was like, I can't believe I finally did it. I haven't had a good croissant in 7 years. And I was like, oh my gosh, I finally did it, you know? So it's, I feel it just like everybody else does because I've gone through it too. So it makes it even more special for me to be able to teach it to people.
Oh yeah. One of mine that I miss because not only am I gluten-free, I'm also dairy-free.
Yeah. You know, which is hard.
And especially like, so one of my things is the gluten-free croissant. It's like, that's what I'm, what I'm waiting for. So I'm very excited. Yeah. I hope you put that class out soon.
I think it's going to be the next class. I want it to be the next class. I was debating just because it's the summer and some people's kitchens are warm and it's better if they're not, you know, too warm, but I think I still might teach it. We'll just tell people like really try to keep your kitchen cooler or do it on a cooler, you know, on a cooler day. Mm. It's a faster process actually than making them with gluten. It's similar process, but I figured out that you need to do it quicker and a few more folds than you would normally do with traditional dough. And we almost don't roll it. You almost use your hands for the whole process because you don't have the elasticity in the dough. It's so tender. So it's a little different.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah. It's very similar to the biscuit method. Okay. Which is what's cool is that because it's lamination. So people that took the biscuit class are going to have a little bit of a head start because they understand the lamination.
Yeah. Right on. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you give us some insight into your process for transitioning your recipes from gluten to gluten-free?
Yeah. So it's, I mean, the first thing, For things like cakes and cupcakes and stuff, again, it's very easy. There's not much you need to change with one-to-one flours. I also am really committed to figuring out everything with one-to-one flours. There's all these rumors online. People say you can't make bread with one-to-one flour, can't make croissants with one-to-one, anything that requires yeast with one-to-one flour. That's not true. What's true is you can't make them only with one-to-one flour. They may need additional ingredients. They need additional ingredients anyway, even if you're using a mix of flours. So of course you can use one-to-one flour, because I think that's one of the frustrations for people is having to have 25 flours in your house. Where do you put them all? How do you keep them fresh? I need this for this recipe, this for this recipe. If you can find one or two one-to-one mixes that you really like, maybe you like one better for bread and one better for cakes, but if you only have to have one or two, that's like what baking used to be, right? All-purpose flour, and maybe you have a cake flour.
Yeah.
And it makes it a lot easier. So a lot of what happens actually, so croissants is a great example. Sometimes I start off with, you know, the recipe and I really analyze it, what might replace this or that. But for the most part, it's a little bit of trial and error. It's a lot of starting with recipes that I already had and thinking if what I need to change, which is usually like for things like bread, maybe your hydration, the amount of water, and adding psyllium husk. But what happened like with the croissants is sometimes I'll be working on one recipe and realize that what I'm doing for one recipe will actually work for something else. So croissants is actually a collaboration by accident between me and Patrick Auger, who's another gluten-free chef, who's done a lot of product development for Better Better Flour. And him and I met online years ago, and turns out we live like 30 minutes from each other.
Oh, how funny.
And yeah, so we were working. I went to his house one day recently. We only just met in person a month ago. And I went because we were going to work on breads together all day because we're coming up with some bread classes and we want to do a bread book. And he was where I was working on sandwich breads, and he was working on artisan like lean doughs, which are not, you know, the crusty breads and stuff. And we had swapped recipes so we could try each other's recipes and stuff beforehand. And I was making his recipe, and just the texture of the dough, I said to him, I think that your dough would make really good croissants. I think I just need to laminate your dough. So on a whim that day, we're in the kitchen. I said, I'm going to try it because I have more experience doing lamination. And I said, I'm just going to make a batch of your dough and I'm going to guesstimate what I think I should put in it for butter and try lamination. And on the first try, they came out, a lot closer. They came out really well. I've only made them once since then. I think I can just get a few more layers, but you could see the layers. They were crunchy outside. Both of us were like, oh my gosh. And it was literally that I was working with a different dough and just felt the texture and realized that that would work, because croissants really are made out of a yeasted similar to a bread dough.
Yeah. Is it really? So sometimes croissants are yeasted?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking it was more like the baking powder and the, you know, like more like the biscuit. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, croissants are yeasted. Puff pastry's not yeasted. But croissant dough and Danish dough are both yeasted. Yeah. They're basically bread dough with butter. Yeah, layered with butter.
Oh, wow. Okay, now I'm even more excited. I can't wait for you to teach this class.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So what is the biggest similarity and then the biggest difference between mainstream baking and gluten-free baking, in your opinion?
That is an awesome question, because I start with this all the time, and I've done videos a few times in my group, and on my own Facebook page on tips and tricks for baking and gluten-free baking. They're really the same, and which is something that I've realized over years of teaching both, is that a lot of home cooks especially don't know just the fundamental things about baking. And that's really where it all starts, whether you're gluten-free or not. Weighing instead of measuring, using a scale is everything. And finally, home cooks are embracing it, which is kind of a funny story. I come out of professional kitchens, obviously. So when I started my website years ago, I had to take all my, I have binders and binders of recipes, and I had to convert them all, one, down to smaller size, and two, I converted them all from weight to cups and measure, because at that time, home cooks, I was like, no one's going to use a scale. They're not going to want my recipes. And now I'm in the process of converting them all back, because finally people are using scales. And with gluten-free baking, I just really stress to people, use a scale. Mm-hmm. And I demonstrated a few times that the reason why is how you pack a cup is completely, it can range by up to an ounce or an ounce and a half, which baking is science, and that can make or break your recipe. So being really precise about your measurements is one thing. Not changing a recipe the first time you make it is another really important thing, especially if you're a home cook. Maybe one thing if you're a professional and that's what you do, but if you've never made a recipe before, don't change three things in it, because you're going to have no idea if it was actually a good recipe to begin with or what affected what. And then having all your ingredients at room temperature, unless a recipe tells you not to. Rule for all baking, all your ingredients should be room temperature. Your milk, your eggs, your butter, everything is room temperature unless it tells you to have it cold. For gluten-free baking, a big difference between the two is that all of your batters and doughs should rest before they go in the oven. So your cake batter, your cookie dough, a good half hour of resting. At room temperature is usually okay unless your kitchen's super hot, and depending on the recipe, some things will go in the fridge, but they need to rest because gluten-free flours take a little longer to hydrate. And so if you don't rest them, that's why a lot of times you hear people talking about gluten-free baked goods being gritty or crumbly, like a sandy texture. Mm-hmm. That's because most of the flours are heavily based with rice, and it just takes longer to absorb the rice, sorghum, some of those things to absorb the moisture. So by letting it sit for a half an hour, it's the game changer. It completely changes your final outcome for your recipe.
So now if you're letting it rest, won't that affect the baking powder?
That is the number one question I get, and that's such a misconception. What people don't realize, in commercial bakeries, like regular baking, we let the butter sit for days. We could never keep up otherwise.
Really?
Like when I was running my big commercial bakery, we did a lot of custom cakes. We'd have buckets of cake batter sitting in the walk-in, because there's no way we would ever be able to bake fresh. You have to have a production schedule. So you would make a batter, certain batters hold better than others, but you would make a batter and hold it overnight in the fridge. All baking powder now is double acting. There used to be a difference, but since I can't remember what the year is, but basically all baking powder is now double acting. So it has two. So it needs baking powder, most leaveners to work, need heat and moisture. Mm. And then baking soda needs acid. So when you, and baking soda is affected more than baking powder for sure. And you'll notice in a lot of my recipes, I use both. And that's partially why. The initial contact with acid is gonna start the leavening process and make things airy. You'll notice right away your dough, like in the biscuits, as soon as you add it, it kind of gets puffy and airy a little bit, the batter. But then in order for it to actually use up the rest of leavening power, you have to apply heat to it. So it's not gonna keep working until it hits the oven. It kind of reserves that. The second half of it. So yeah, it makes almost no difference. A lot of most pancake batters, waffle batters, all those things, even with traditional baking, they can sit 24 hours easily, and some things can sit longer, and you don't lose any of your leavening power.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great tip. Yeah. So a lot of people take up cooking and baking for the first time when they go gluten-free. Do you feel like your background was an advantage, or did you Yes. have to like relearn everything?
No, it was a huge advantage because, again, I think one, knowing those fundamentals and being understanding that baking really is a science. It's very different from cooking. You can't just swap things out. So that was a huge advantage, and understanding, you know, how things work. And so if I have an issue, it was much easier. Now I don't have as many issues because I just know going right into the project what I need to change or what my outcome is probably going to be. But when I was first starting it, if I have an issue, it would be a lot easier for me to troubleshoot it. Because if something went wrong, it's much easier for me to know what the possible reasons why, because they're going to be similar to what they are in traditional baking. It's just the cause might be different. Like maybe it's underhydrated or overhydrated or whatever. And then I can figure out why or what I need to change. Yeah, it was definitely a big advantage. A disadvantage maybe personally in the very beginning, because my standards were higher for what I expect the outcome to be. But I also think that is a big advantage because it means that my recipes, I'm creating really good recipes because I'm really picky about what I do.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing is like, we yeah. have to, it's hard at the beginning because you're like, no, it's supposed to taste good. I'm not going to put up with something that's sandy or a brick or yeah. whatever. But yeah, I feel like having that attitude from the yeah. very beginning kind of pushes you into an even better place. What is your...
Yeah, I don't want my stuff to be, it's good for gluten-free. I just want it to be, it's good.
Yes, exactly. Like my favorite is bringing things that mainstream eaters can't tell the difference.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. What's your favorite thing to bake?
Wow. I don't have a favorite. I guess I kind of go through phases. For a long time it was bread. I really do like making bread, but I like cakes, and I love cake decorating. I always really liked that. But I kind of like everything. I never really could pick. And I cook too. And eventually I'll probably do some cooking classes. Even in the baking side, I'm going to include pasta because it's a dough. But I could never 100% narrow it down because I just like food too much, all of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I do like making things pretty.
And you know, that's an important part of eating is the visual aspect. Yeah. We eat with our eyes first. Yeah. So wrapping up, if you were to leave listeners with one single action today, what would it be?
I think definitely to try something. Don't be afraid. Find a recipe and try. I have lots of, you know, some of my recipes you can only get in a book or in a class, but I have a lot of recipes on my website that are free that anybody can get to and anybody can make. And pick a recipe, find something that's something that you are anxious to have that you haven't had in a while or something that you love. If you're really new to baking, pick something simple, take waffles or pancakes and muffins. Muffins are a great one because muffins lead you into cakes and other things because they're similar, but they're not that hard to make. I have a blueberry muffin recipe on my website that you can interchange with other things. That's quite easy and really good. Don't be afraid and try. And just remember that it's science. And so the first time you do it, really follow the instructions. They're not suggestions, they're instructions. And if you can just follow along as it's written, you'll have good results. And then, you know, practice makes perfect.
Awesome advice. Thank you. So if our listeners want to learn more about you and your work, where can they go?
So you can find me on my website is chefalina.com and it's A-L-I-N-A. And I have lots of information on there. And then on Facebook, Instagram, all social media, I'm at Chef Alina E. And then on Facebook, I also have a gluten-free group called Gluten-Free Baking Secrets, Tips, and Tricks, which you can find. It's a public group on Facebook.
And I understand that you have a free gift for everyone today.
I do. So, and I guess we'll put it in the show notes.
I will, yes.
Address to it. So I have a guide that I created to gluten-free starches and flours. So it's covers, I think, around 20, maybe a few more of the top starches and flours. And it goes over the properties of all of them, what they're, how it talks about interchanging them. Like this one is similar to that one, which ones are a little heavier, which ones are lighter. And then I also included at the bottom of the kind of blurb on each one, the weight of it. So that if you're converting from cups to weight, how many grams are in a cup of that specific flour or starch?
Oh, that's super useful.
It's helpful for people. Yeah. Which is really helpful for people. And then, you can combine that if you get that guide and then go on my website. I have two recipes for copycat one-to-one gluten-free flours. So you can start with them as written, but then if you have that guide and you can't have, say, sorghum, then maybe you can take that same recipe and switch out for one of the other things you find in the guide and kind of use those two things together to create a flour mix that you can use yourself.
Oh, that's terrific. Thank you so much, Chef Alina, for joining today. This has been a wonderful interview. And that's everything that we have for today. So I look forward to seeing you online and I can't wait for that croissant recipe.
Yeah,
and
that coming croissant. Soon. All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you.